Formula One headed to Shanghai, and boy, did it deliver. A teenager took pole, won his first ever Formula One race. Lewis Hamilton stood on the podium for the first time in Ferrari red, and both McLarens didn't even make it to the starting grid. The chaos of this new era of cars is giving us the most unpredictable season in years, and we're here for it. Plus, it was a sprint weekend in Shanghai, and by the end of it, Toto Wolff was watching three of his drivers on that podium. And it got a little emotional. Welcome back to Away We Go podcast.
Are you ready? And it's lights out and away we go. Let's do
it. Welcome back to Away We Go podcast. My name's Diane Bortoletto and I'm your host. And today I'm in Margaret River and I'm joined, yay, she's back, by the lovely Kira Gillen, who last week was off recovering from wisdom teeth surgery. So welcome back to the show, Kira.
Thank you. I'm very excited to get back. I was a little bit worried that I might not make it. So delighted to be here.
Very happy to have you back and absolutely thrilled to see you in a red cap with a Ferrari logo on it.
Great yes, minds, right?
And I'm decked out in my Ferrari kit as well because we've just had the Shanghai Grand Prix, or the Chinese Grand Prix, the second race of the season, a race that's held in the Jingdang district of Shanghai, 5.45 kilometres, 56 laps. And really, there was just no time to breathe. It was a very exciting race. I don't care what anyone says about these new regulations as far as racing goes. It's delivering exciting races. Shanghai was a sprint weekend as well, so we had lots of action that counts, you know, in the points. What did you think?
Oh my God, it was a crazy race. It was a crazy race. It was a crazy weekend, you know, overall. Yeah, so much to begin with, so much to talk about. I don't even know where to start, but I really enjoyed it, thoroughly enjoyed it.
Let's start with the most heartwarming of headlines from the Chinese Grand Prix, and that's Kimi Antonelli, youngest ever pole sitter in qualifying to take pole position, and then he converted it to his first ever race win, and he shared the podium with his teammate George Russell. Lewis Hamilton got his first podium for Ferrari. Oh, we're so happy to see Ferrari back on the podium, and Lewis on the podium for Ferrari wearing red for the very first time. It was just, just a brilliant, I mean, you could just see Toto Wolff just swelling with pride at pretty much all of his drivers on the podium because Lewis was here, obviously, for a really long time.
Yeah. No, it was really very special. And actually, there's a really funny video of, just speaking really quickly about Toto, of him in the garage. He's about to do an interview with Sky Sports. And they cut to Toto and then they cut to the wall and it's like Russell, Antonelli, Hamilton. And he was like, oh, for a minute, I thought we had three drivers, you know? And then he was like, oh, Lewis will always be our driver. And, you know, obviously I'm a Ferrari fan, I'm not a massive Mercedes fan, but I do find that still very heartwarming and lovely. And I'm so delighted for Hamilton, so delighted for Kimi, which we'll talk about, but really so delighted for Hamilton. Yeah, it was well-deserved.
Well, I'm also super thrilled for Italy and just having an Italian driver back on the podium, first time since 2005, first time there's been an Italian driver on the podium, and that was Fisichella.
So
to hear the Italian national anthem and then the German national anthem for the team, I was taken straight back to the Schumacher days of Michael Schumacher winning everything, being a German driver for an Italian team. So the anthems were the other way around. Oh, I cried lots, actually. I was so emotional for Kimi, watching him cry during his post-race interview.
Right?
Oh, it was so lovely. Yeah. George doesn't really get a mention because he was just like, eh. But Lewis was also, you could just see Lewis was so happy for Kimi. I think Lewis was happier for Kimi than what George was for Kimi. Obviously, Lewis was just very happy anyway because it was his first podium. It was, it was just like the nicest happy ending to a story. That's what it feels like.
It really was. I always get so anxious when I see Charles and Lewis battling together, but it was so heartwarming to hear Charles come over the radio and be like, oh, this is fun. You know, I'm really enjoying this. So it was just like everyone of the top three of the four were very happy. And it was just really heartwarming to see, and provided such great entertainment. Like, it was such a great race. I do think George might have been disappointed. And maybe he's secretly a bit worried, you know, who expected Kimi to get his maiden win in the second race? You know, I think George in exactly. It maybe in his head, even though he's been pretty cool, calm, collected, and hasn't been too boastful or anything, probably in the back of his head, he's thinking, oh, I'm going to do, you know, get a few race wins here before the rest catch up. To now have to worry about Kimi, yeah, it could be interesting times for him.
But I also think Mercedes need to worry about, like, George needs to worry about these first six races and getting all those results, because then the compression ratio that the Mercedes power unit has, the FIA are changing that regulation after, I think it was six races. So really, both Mercedes drivers need to take advantage of whatever edge they might have over their rivals with this compression ratio that they've got before the regulation changes. George, maybe he was disappointed because, gosh, Kimi's so young. Max Verstappen was the youngest Formula One race winner ever, and now Kimi is the second youngest. So George, I think he's got reason to be worried. That said, Kimi had an exceptional race. He didn't have a great sprint race, and George has got way more experience. If the car remains dominant, I think George's experience will probably serve him well this season, even though I kind of don't really want to admit it.
I think you're right. I think it's a fair assumption to make. I think reliability was the issue for George. You know, he had an issue for quali, and so he didn't qualify on pole. That was the first thing. Then he seemed to have a little bit of an issue during the race at the start, but maybe he was just trying to gain power. You're right that Antonelli didn't have a great sprint, but he did really well at the start of the main race, which was really important for him. And as everyone was saying, his biggest competition was George, and he managed to, you know, to get away from him.
Yeah, exactly.
And then obviously the Ferrari boys fighting in the middle kept George behind for a long time, whatever that issue was. Maybe it wasn't an issue. Maybe it was just trying to build the power back up again. George didn't get the chance to kind of attack Kimi as early as he would want to, I would assume. So yeah, great day and all for Kimi.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the Ferrari drivers did keep George Russell behind them for longer than George would have liked. Quickly running through qualifying. So this is how the grid lined up. We had Kimi Antonelli on pole, as we said, George Russell in second. So it was a Mercedes lockout on the front row. Then it was a Ferrari lockout on the second row with Lewis and Charles Leclerc. Then it was Oscar Piastri in fifth, Lando Norris in sixth. So yes, again, Oscar out qualifying his teammate. And then in seventh was Pierre Gasly in the Alpine. The Alpine is looking surprisingly strong this season. Then Max Verstappen in eighth, Isaac Hadjar in ninth, and Ollie Bearman in the Haas in 10th. So that's the top 10 in qualifying. Really mixed. The top teams are there, but the middle order has changed since last season with this new era of cars. And then just running through the top 10 of the race. So Kimi obviously took the top step, George on the second step, and Lewis rounded out the podium in third, then Charles Leclerc in fourth, Ollie Bearman in fifth. Fantastic result for him in the Haas. Yeah. Pierre Gasly in the Alpine in sixth, Liam Lawson in seventh in the Racing Bulls, Isaac Hadjar in eighth in Red Bull Racing. Interesting. Liam Lawson beating Isaac Hadjar from the junior team. Carlos Sainz, hooray, points for Williams in ninth. And then Franco Colapinto in 10th. Two Alpines in the top 10. Holy cow.
Double points for Alpine.
Yeah, exactly. And then we had so many DNFs in the race and DNS, like did not start. Mm-hmm. Both McLarens did not start. They had, you read up about this, Kira.
So for Piastri, it was an electrical problem on the power unit. And then for Norris, he said it's just an issue that's not letting us even start the car. They didn't really know much when he was being interviewed earlier. They were trying to investigate what had happened. So yeah, really, really bad for McLaren and really bad for Piastri. That's two races of the two races that he hasn't even got raced. I mean, obviously he did sprint, but...
Yeah, but he's not done one race lap in the car, like proper race lap, like besides a sprint in this car. Considering where those two were last year, it just goes to show what these new regulations do, right? Like they just completely flatten whatever hierarchy there is and clean slate. and the McLarens and struggling a little bit. We also had Gabriel Bortoletto, who did not start in the Audi. So I'm very sorry, my cousin, seeing you there in the pits looking very sad. And Alex Albon in the Williams also did not start and then did not finish. Wow. Gosh, Fernando Alonso had to retire on, I think it was lap 32, because he started losing feelings in his fingers from the vibration in the car, in that Aston Martin car.
Oh my God.
It wasn't the car that, I mean, the car's not running great. It's causing vibration, which last week, Simone and I were talking about how that could result in permanent nerve damage to the driver. So he started losing feelings in his fingers and said, I'm out, retired the car. And Lance Stroll had some sort of mechanical issue and didn't finish the race. And Max Verstappen as well.
I know, I can't believe it about Max. And I really feel for Max because so he started, what, it was eighth. And then in the start, he went down to P13, I think. He definitely went quite a few places back. And like the way we describe it is like he's driving a tractor. But he got that tractor up to P6. And I honestly think he was going to go further. He was doing really well. It was quite impressive. I mean, as only Max could do, to be honest.
Exactly.
It's an issue. And so, yeah, gut-wrenching. But it's also kind of fun to see just, you know, to see it so mixed up and see it so different. I have so much faith in Red Bull. They will come back during the season. I mean, look at them last year. Like they were in there fighting for the championship win and they had problems during the mid of the season. So, you know, it's all to play for still.
Yeah, exactly. I really do agree with you there. I think it is all to play for. And, you know, the teams have got quite a gap now where they can work on the car and fix all these gremlins. Because Formula One has announced no races in the Middle East in April. So no racing in April, no Bahrain, no Saudi Arabia Grand Prix. There's 5 weeks between, weeks between races. Oh, what are we going to do?
I'm gutted. I'm like, come on. You could. Only Japan said, hey, you can do a double race. You can double stack here. And they were like, no. You know, I don't understand why. Race, you're in the vicinity. Like, I get that you have the whole logistics and whatever else. From what I understand, it's not like it's the same cargo that they send from Australia to, you know, they have a whole kind of bunch of different ships that they use that they send to different places. And I've known for a bit that probably Saudi and Bahrain wasn't going to happen. So, like, they could have kept it to keep us entertained. To be honest, I'm actually quite surprised from a financial perspective that Formula One is willing to lose two races.
From a financial point of view, I think that's why they've decided to call it off as opposed to race somewhere else, because then there'd be new contracts that they would need, new broadcast deals, all of those partnership and sponsorship, stakeholder, all of those things would need to be, like, it's just such a behemoth, massive, mega traveling circus that I just think it's just too hard for them to reorganize without putting noses out of joints with current partners, current sponsors that are not obviously able to, you know, maybe they can't get to Australia, maybe they can't get to Japan. And I just think it's just too hard.
I think you make a good point, because actually, if you think about it, because it's such short notice, like, okay, there's been talk about it for a few weeks, but really it hasn't been confirmed till this weekend. It is extremely short notice. I do think you could be right that financially, on the reverse side, it probably isn't worth it in the short term. You know, when you think about the year that they couldn't do China, they knew quite a lot in advance, so they were able to get another track in there and get it organized. But it's a huge loss for us as fans.
And yes, definitely, definitely. The thing is that this is the equal longest calendar we've had in Formula One with 24 races.
And we're spoiled.
22 races. We've still got a lot to look forward to. There's going to be a gap. I think the teams are going to love that, because they're going to have data from three races that they've run, with Japan coming up next, of course, where they can take all those learnings and work on the car. And it'll be interesting to see what happens when they come back. So there's no racing in April at all. And then the 1st to the 3rd of May, Miami, it looks like a couple of weeks off, then Canada, and Monaco in June. Now, this was also a sprint weekend, which is kind of cruel, I think, to have a sprint weekend as the second race of a brand new regulation for these cars, this brand new era. Yeah, I kind of felt sorry for everybody having to go straight into a sprint weekend where, you know, obviously they lose out on those two free practice times because you've got sprint quali and a sprint race. As a fan, I love sprint weekends because it's like, okay, there's skin in the game. They need to do well here in quali and in the race because there's points in it. I felt sorry for the teams though. Running through the quali for sprint, George Russell was on pole. Kimi Antonelli was in second. Again, Mercedes have just locked out every grid so far this season. Lando Norris was in third, Lewis Hamilton in fourth in the Ferrari, Oscar Piastri in the McLaren in fifth, Charles Leclerc in the Ferrari in sixth, Pierre Gasly again in the Alpine in seventh, Max Verstappen, Red Bull in eighth, Ollie Bearman qualified ninth in the Haas, and running out the top 10 was Isaac Hadjar in Red Bull Racing. And I found the sprint race equally as exciting. I was sad when it ended because it was just, again, action-packed. Like those Ferraris, like Simone said last week, they're like a slingshot at the start. They just go. And it really is like watching a video game. I absolutely have no idea how those drivers find those gaps and get the cars without crashing. Like it's just...
In now.
Oh, it's crazy. It's so good to watch.
It's so good. I was watching Sainz talk about his results and he was saying about how he'd gone from like P17 to P10 in the feature race. And they were like, how did you feel? He's using the popular comparison. I was like, Mario Kart. I was like, you know, some cars are going slow and the other cars are going faster. You've got to find the gap. And But it's so impressive. The reaction times of these guys. Who was it? I think it was in Australia when Lawson didn't get off the line that quickly. And I'm going to say Isaac, I'm going to say Hadjar, but I'm not sure who it was who was behind him, who had to like boom around him because he was suddenly revealed that he was like stationary on the track, in the grid. So it's very impressive and it's very fun to watch.
The reaction times, I mean, this is why they're Formula One drivers, right? They train for this.
Right.
But it's really impressive to see.
Yeah, it is. It's. I know I'm going to jinx it. I shouldn't jinx. I shouldn't say this, but I'm so shocked there's not been a crash yet with the different start abilities of these cars. You know, because clearly they're not all the same. They're not all, you know, like if you look at the Red Bulls, they went on softs, so you would have expected that they would have had a better start. Max dropped five places. You expect certain things, and then they're not happening. I'm really surprised there's not been more crashes, which is great.
There's been a few spins and a few crashes, like not necessarily racing, like last week, Oscar just trying to get to the grid. And
I know.
and Max last week in qualifying, just, you know, going off and hitting the wall.
But I mean like one driver taking out three. Like I'm just surprised that there's not been more of those. I mean, obviously it's only the second race. We're very excited. There's lots more racing to come. There's plenty of chances. But yeah, it's impressive how quick and reactionary they are.
Well, running through the sprint results, so George won the sprint race and then Ferrari, then Charles Leclerc came in second and Lewis Hamilton in third. Lando Norris finished in fourth, which is, you know, a good result. And then the car just died, like wasn't able to start the race. Kimi Antonelli didn't have a great sprint race and he finished in fifth. Oscar Piastri in sixth, Liam Lawson in Racing Bulls in seventh, Ollie Bearman in the Haas in eighth, Max Verstappen in Red Bull in ninth, and Esteban Ocon in the other Haas in 10th. Of course, there's only points for the top eight, right, for the sprint.
Mm, yeah.
That was the sprint, and it was hugely exciting and lots of change of lead. I thought Ferrari was going to win at one point. I'm really enjoying all the overtaking, and I know there's a whole lot of old school Formula One fans out there that don't like this battery era, that don't like that drivers have to lift off and recharge the battery. And I don't like not knowing what the battery is, like I said last week. Like they do put the graphics on the screen sometimes, but not all the time. It's a bugbear. Take these 5 weeks in April, Formula One. If you're listening, of course, yeah, I wish. Fix the data and give us the graphics that we need as viewers. We want to see the battery levels. all the time, or we want to have access to it on our phone so we can follow our drivers and see what their battery levels are. We need to know. We need to know.
Yeah, it does help. It definitely does help when you kind of see and you're like, oh, okay. But I think there's still a lot more technical stuff that they need to be explaining, if that makes sense. Yeah, I agree.
Formula One news, no racing in April, as we've said. Oh, rumors. You've probably heard this as well. Mercedes are in talks to buy a stake at the Alpine team, that 24% of Alpine that's up for sale, that Christian Horner and a bunch of investors were looking at potentially buying as well. So whether this is Toto Wolff's way of keeping Christian Horner out of the paddock by having Mercedes buy it so he can't, Mercedes are saying, well, we supply Alpine with the engine, so it makes sense for us to have a stake in the team. But then it could become like Racing Bulls is to Red Bull Racing, almost like a sister team, a junior team, if you like. That's one to watch, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I was quite surprised to hear it. I mean, I do agree with the kind of elements of competition. Like if you've got one team owning several teams, are you going to be getting the chance to be as competitive? And it is really quite interesting to see, again, it's only two races, though we've seen three, Alpine up there in the mix. And they've done something to really change things for themselves. And so I would hate to see that getting hampered or tampered with by, you know, Mercedes owning them. However, that said, I'm not sure how I feel about Christian Horner potentially coming back. I'm confused by Alpine. I thought there was a whole load of celebrities behind them. And
that's the stake that's being sold.
Oh, right. Oh, interesting.
Yeah, Ryan Reynolds and I can't remember who else.
The Irish golfer. Rory McIlroy.
Oh, McIlroy, right. Yeah, so the Mercedes potentially buying the Alpine stake could be a bit like Racing Bulls and Red Bulls, where Racing Bulls is the junior team of Red Bull. Red Bull bought Jaguar and then that became Red Bull. And then they bought...
Minardi, was it? Who Racing Bulls were previously.
Yes, that's right. It was Minardi, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Minardi, I don't remember a lot about Minardi, except Mark Webber drove for them for a little while. And towards the end, they were really like, they were coming last and everything. That's how I remember Minardi, yeah.
What I do find interesting, though, is that Alpine have obviously turned a corner. I mean, obviously, it's only two races, you know, but they really just see Gasly up there competing week after week at P7 to qualify. And then, you know, he was disappointed he didn't get P5 today. He possibly could, except for the fact that Behrman has the Ferrari engine and is doing very well for himself. But, I mean, obviously they have the Mercedes engine, but, you know, they really seem to have turned a corner and unlocked something. So, yeah, it is a question, you know, if Mercedes were to buy a stake in them, does it put them into a junior position, or can they still compete in the same way that they are now, as though they would be fighting, like ultimately trying to fight for a championship? I don't see Flavio managing a team that's going to be a sister team, you know, a baby team, a junior team.
No, and I don't see Flavio Briatore having his position if Mercedes own a 24% stake of that team. I think Mercedes would get rid of him.
Oh,
that's my thinking. And I also think that if Christian Horner's consortium were to buy the stake and not Mercedes, I mean, Christian wants to run the team. That's what Christian Horner wants. He wants back in the paddock. He wants to be in control. He wants that job. And Flavio technically isn't the TP, but we all know he is, right? He's just there as an advisor. I mean, how the guy is even in Formula One anyway is... questionable.
That's an episode for another day, to talk about people like Flavio and Christian Horner, who are questionable people coming back and being in Formula One again. I'm excited for Alpine, and I actually am surprised to hear myself say that. It was really nice to see, even though he was disappointed, it was really nice to see Gasly talking about P6 and feeling like he's back and he's competitive again. And, you know, they've been so, and I have to say that's possibly down to Flavio. Bryce, I mean, you know, they had a terrible end to last year, but like, he's done something, you know.
Well, has he, or is it just the Mercedes engine that's dominant, and that they happen to be running, and that they're being able to get the most out of it when other teams like McLaren cannot? Who knows?
Yeah, okay, maybe, you know, but what about Williams? Williams also have the Mercedes engine and they're not doing well either, you know?
No, so Williams and McLaren have got the same sort of issues. But look, I've got a little issue with Alpine in that, well, firstly, they screwed over Oscar Piastri at the start. Secondly, the Jack Doohan saga with Alpine. So you know, as an Australian supporting, I mean, I like Pierre Gasly.
Of course.
Michael Colapinto, him personally, I have no issue with. His fans, when they were sending death threats.
Be careful, La Confia.
Yes, I just found that all really kind of gross, awful. And I don't like Flavio Briatore. Yes, a fellow Italian, but I mean,
as you say, like, it's questionable that he's even back in Formula One, you know, no, I think for me, it's more Pierre. Like, I mean, and I've not been, when I look at the list of 22 drivers, Pierre's not up there with somebody as I want to see win. I think when you look at teams that really have struggled and then you see them doing well and in there trying to fight with the teams that dominate, it is heartwarming. But I 100% agree with you. I mean, to be honest, I'm glad they screwed over Piastri because Piastri ended up with a winning team. McLaren is a better team to be with, you know. Then with Jack, that was very unfair. Very unfair. And I think ultimately it came down to money, you know. I mean, like, I'm assuming that the Colapinto is bringing a lot of money because there is no reason why Colapinto is being perceived as the better driver to Jack Doohan. You know, Jack wasn't even given a chance.
Exactly. I've got lots of layered issues with Alpine just from an Australian point of view. Yeah. Shall we go on to better news?
Yes, please.
Predict the podium.
I am stupid.
The away we go, prediction tracker. Well, I've got to say, after the sprint race, the niece took the lead. She picked well. The niece is my niece, who during the Australian Grand Prix was working in the Aston Martin paddock. Like,
amazing.
I know. Like, this 18-year-old kid, she's got this most amazing job and I loved it and they looked after her quite well. But after the main race, look, I won't lie, I'll be upfront. I've got a second account. So I'm on the leaderboard. I'm on the prediction tracker as Travoletto. Travoletto didn't do too badly, actually. I got a couple right and ended up with 25 points. So I scored nothing in the sprint. And then in the main race, I picked Kimi Antonelli.
Nice.
I got 25 points for Kimi. And then with my other account, I picked Charles, George and Lewis. And I got Lewis, of course. And then I got, that was in the main race. And then in the sprint, I picked Lewis, Charles and Kimi. And I got Charles, who finished second in the sprint. So yeah, I scored a couple of points in. On the leaderboard, I called myself, it must be the water. To that, my seat is full of water. Well, it must be the water. Charles Leclerc's famous line last year. Yes, yeah, so I'm top of the leaderboard, which is a total fluke at 55. And then, yes, the niece is second. And Michan is third on 40 points. And Simply Perfect from Perth is sitting on 38. And then the list goes on. So, yeah, well done, everybody, for getting – we've still got a few people on zero. Where are you? Smooth operator. Oh, you're pretty good. You're sitting in equal sixth position. So that's pretty good.
It's not too bad. It's not too bad.
Now, on your prediction tracker, the Formula Life Pulse, I'll remember this because I'm sitting in position 81, like Oscar's number. I scored 20 points. This race, because I picked, again, I got the DNFs correct. I picked the right number of DNFs and I got an extra 5 points because I picked a safety car. So, yeah, I didn't pick any of the
Raging. I don't know how I didn't pick a safety car. I thought I had. I got 15 points because I got that Kimi got fastest lap and I got someone on the podium.
Good.
But, yeah, I got completely wrong otherwise. I'm raging. But anyway, it is what it is. Keep going next week.
The short story is that I'm beating you in both prediction trackers. So
that's
so far, she says all cocky after two races. So yeah, let's just see.
I'm pretty sure you'll probably beat me. No, I do. I'm really bad at predicting.
Oh, so am I. Yeah,
zero strategy.
Oh, well, no, I'm a bit the same. I just keep going with my heart. not necessarily
bad.
Not necessarily what the data says. It's like, oh, Ferrari. But it's so good to see Ferrari back. It was so good to hear the Italian anthem again. I can't tell you. And then they played that Italian song, Sarà perché ti amo, like after the podium. And the, I loved it. I was crying. It was so good.
Yeah, it was nice.
It was. All right. Now, a shout out to creators. It's a new little segment I've introduced this year. And this week's creator goes to Carolyn Smith, who is It's Carolyn's Corner on Instagram. She's a super fun American content creator, mostly Formula One. She doesn't really do many other sports, but it's really fun, her content. But what I like is that she's just done a two-part series, and maybe there's more coming, on merch ideas for teams for women. She's like, all the merch you see on the track is pretty much designed for men. This is what women would want to wear, you know, and she talks about hats as well. She's saying that she's got a kid's hat on because it fits her head properly, whereas all the trucker hats are made for the male head, which is bigger. They're covering lots of logos, and she wants something a bit more subtle. I thought it was really good. And some of the points that she made, I was like, yeah, I would wear a Formula One jacket day to day out on the street if it didn't look like I was trying to pretend to be part of the pit crew.
Yeah.
So it's Carolyn's Corner. Go give her a follow if you don't follow her already. Now, next week we've got a break. So next week I've got a special guest coming on, and we're going to talk about China and Shanghai and the race. And then the week after that, we've got Japan. That'll be the last race for 5 weeks. After the Japanese Grand Prix, the week after, I'm going to have a special Japanese travel episode. So if anybody's thinking about going to the Japanese Grand Prix next year or in future years, that's one to look out for. And a Japanese travel guide is also on its way. So I'm still putting the final touches on that before that's published, and that'll be a free downloadable, much like the Melbourne one. All right. Geez, it's been emotional.
It has been emotional, very much roller coaster. I just hope that in Japan, we can see a bit of a difference. It hasn't got as many straights, got more corners, so it could be a better track for Ferrari. And if they can keep the racing clean, I don't know, you know, a Ferrari win could be in the picture.
Well, the fact they kept it clean this weekend, and we're recording this on Sunday night, just a couple of hours after the race, so it's very fresh in my mind still of how close it was between Charles Leclerc and Lewis Hamilton, racing each other, swapping positions really often, and they kept it clean. Like you said, you know, Joel came on the radio and said, oh, that was a lot of fun fighting with Lewis, and Lewis really enjoyed it as well. It's really nice to see him enjoying racing again, even with 20 years Formula One experience. Last year, he was so down and so flat and so dejected, and this year, he's just walking taller. Oh, one question, random question for you. Which race do you think it'll be where Kim Kardashian makes an appearance?
If not Miami, then Vegas.
Miami's a good call, actually. I reckon Miami. Yeah.
Obviously, she's got 4 kids, so I'm kind of thinking she's not going to go to Europe. You know, and if you're going to go to Europe, you're going to go to a warm one, right? Because she lives in LA. You're not going to be there in Silverstone. Though, if he's hoping that he might win in Silverstone, I don't know. Are they still together?
It has been quiet. I haven't seen anything about Lewis and Kim for a little while. Anyway, well, yeah. I think that's all we've got time for this week. Great to have you back on the podcast, Kira. And yes, a big thank you to Simone last week for stepping in when you couldn't be here. Thank you very much, everybody, for tuning in. Hello, if you're watching on YouTube. Of course, you can connect with us on all the social media platforms. We're on LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, YouTube, Threads. And, of course, you can email us at hello@awaywegopodcast.com. Please rate and review the show. Please subscribe if you're watching on YouTube, because that really helps this podcast get more eyeballs, and it really does mean the world to us. Thank you. Hit the subscribe button, and until next week, and until lights out.
Are you ready? It's lights out, and away we go.
Away We Go podcast is produced by Diane Bortoletto.